NBA on NBC.
What is up, everybody? This is Jim Mylock, and you're listening to Pot of Fame, the podcast where we break down the careers of former athletes and decide whether or not they should get a call to the Hall. On today's podcast, we're talking about former NBA power forward Larry Nance and whether or not he belongs in the Basketball Hall of Fame. And joining us in just a moment to discuss Lance's career in Hall of Fame candidacy is the co-host of the podcast, 32 Fans, Alex Chester. Before I bring Alex on, let's talk a little more about Larry Nance. So Larry Nance had a 13-year NBA career where he played with Phoenix and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Basically, he split his career half in Phoenix to start his career and then finished his career with the Cavs and found pretty good success with both teams. He got both of those teams to the conference finals of their respective leagues. So Western Conference Finals in 84 with Phoenix and the Eastern Conference Finals in 92 with the Cavs. But never made to the finals. But nevertheless, from 1981 to 1994, he was one of the better power forwards in the NBA. For his career, he averaged 17 points per game, 8 boards, 2.6 assists, and 2.2 blocks. He's a 3-time All-Star, a 3-time All-Defensive Team member. I think most of you are going to remember him from winning the very first NBA Slam Dunk Contest, which was in 1984. All 6'10" of him doing the Rock the Cradle. We'll talk about that a bit, but I think most of us think of Larry Nance as that dunk contest winner, but again, much more than that. 15,687 career points, 7,352 career rebounds, 2,393 career assists, and 2,027 career blocks, which is good for 19th in NBA history. Now, the area where Larry shines, but didn't really exist when he played, but now looking through today's lens, he really shines is advanced analytics. If you're a basketball fan that enjoys advanced stats, Larry Nance is your guy, even if you didn't know Larry Nance was your guy. For his career, at 3.6 box plus minus. That's good for 44th in NBA history. He has a career 43.5 VORP, so value over replacement player. That's good for 48th in NBA history. He has 109.6 career win shares. That's 64th in NBA history. And his 0.171 win shares per 48 is 61st in NBA history. And if you're someone like me, and I'm going to, shout out Basketball Reference, I'm an ambassador over there. If you look at his similarity scores by win shares, right? First 13 years of his career, the players he's similar with are Dominique Wilkins, Chet Walker, Kevin McHale, John Havlicek, Jerry Lucas, Alvin Hayes, Chris Bosh, Paul Pierce, all Hall of Fame type players. And again, Larry Nance, he's never really been in serious consideration for the Basketball Hall of Fame. And again, a 3-time All-Star, 3-time All-Defensive guy, never played in the finals. I can get that. But when we look at it through today's lens of advanced analytics, he's off the charts. And then his core numbers, almost 16,000 career points, over 2,000 career blocks. He has a much better case than just, hey, he won the first slam dunk competition. So Alex and I are going to go through Larry Nance's career, his candidacy. And again, you might think Larry Nance deep cut, but really this is a guy with a very good case. And I had a blast, talking about his case with Alex. So, I hope you're ready to enjoy a great show. Happy New Year's. You're listening to this. It's Monday. You have the day off of work. So sit back, relax. You have Larry Nance talk for the next, 45 minutes ahead of you. But with the quick facts out of the way, let's bring on Alex. All right. I'd like to welcome back to the podcast, the co-host of the podcast, 32 Fans, Alex Chester. Alex, welcome back. How have you been?
Great. Thanks for having me. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. So we are talking basketball today. I've been doing a lot of baseball pods because it's Baseball Hall of Fame season right now, but we're also in the swing of basketball season. Alex right now, as he's recording the pod, is also watching Ja Morant's debut here. It is December 19th. By the time this pod comes out, Ja will have a couple of games under his belt, so we'll see how he's doing there. And if he can turn that Grizzlies season around, which he probably won't since it's a little too late for that with how they're doing. But today we're not talking about Ja Morant. We are not talking about a former Grizzly. We're actually talking about a player that entered the league before the Grizzlies was even in Vancouver, before that was even a franchise, and that is going back to talk about Larry Nance. Yes, we're going back to senior.
Yeah.
Good call, Alex. We got to do that. As I was searching Larry Nance and stuff, that his son kept coming up. So Larry Nance Sr. is his son. Of course, Larry Nance Jr., probably younger listeners are familiar with him, but before Jr. was in the league, Larry Nance was a all-star, all-defensive team type guy in the NBA, won the first NBA dunk competition. And honestly, looking back through today's lens, had an even more impressive NBA career than maybe the people that were watching him back in the 80s even understood. And we're going to talk about his career today and his Hall of Fame candidacy. So, Alex, the first question I'm going to ask you at the top here, you know, when Larry Nance comes to mind, I don't know if he comes to mind much for you, but when he comes up in conversation, when his name comes across the screen for something, they're showing an old highlight, I guess, what's the first thing that's come to your mind?
Yeah, I think at this point, he's probably most well-known just for being his son's dad, because, you know, his son has been a pretty high-profile NBA player for the last decade plus. He's on the Pelicans at the moment, but he's injured, not playing tonight in the game I'm watching. I guess it has to be that early slam dunk win. Now, look, to be completely honest, I wasn't watching live in 1984. I was still wearing diapers. I became an NBA fan really in real time, you know, during the Bulls' first three-peat in the early 90s. So I probably caught the tail end of Larry Nance's career, but I don't really remember ever watching a game of his live. But, you know, going back, you know, watching video on YouTube and full games, a couple of playoff games maybe we can talk about later, and looking at his stats, the first thing that has to come to mind, I just think, is the slam dunk contest, because when he wins in 1984, he beats Dr. J, he beats Dominique Wilkins, not to mention Ralph Sampson, Derek Griffith, Clyde Drexler, Michael Cooper. So he comes into that slam dunk contest as a very, 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 low-ranked guy in the dunk contest. And he becomes known after that as the Hayatollah of Slamola, with a very big win. And really, it was just, I mean, he had crazy hops. They called him the greatest leaper in the game. He not only winning the slam dunk contest, but he is in top 20 in blocks all time. And he is the only non-center, or I think, he retired with the most blocks for a non-center ever. And still, you know, there's only a couple other non-centers, you know, Duncan, depending how you want to categorize him, maybe KG, who are up there in blocks with Larry Nance. So just, you know, tremendous jumper, both on offense and on defense.
Yeah, I only really knew him growing up, because by the time I was understanding the NBA, he was already out of the league. But I just saw him, you know, the famous 84 dunk contest, because it was the first, but also that Rock the Cradle he was doing.
Yeah.
And that was a very famous poster to this day. It's very iconic. I think that's the first image that pops in my mind, him in that Suns jersey. And he looks, honestly, like very long arms, you know, I think over 7 foot wingspan. Looks ripped, honestly, and he's throwing it down. And you know, the thing that I didn't know till years later, Alex, I think shocks me a little bit, is just how tall Larry Nance was. He was 6'10", and yeah. I feel like in the 80s, nowadays, of course, we have Durant, we have Giannis, we have these tall guys that play like, you know, small forwards, guards, but that kind of movement, I just thought he was like a 6'7", 6'8", type guy. He had apparently over a 40-inch vertical. Those type of athletes at that size were not very common in the 80s. And I think that athleticism stands out a lot, because I think, you know, his son has a bit of it. But I think Larry Nance is someone who could, from an athleticism standpoint, easily come into today's NBA. Not as a shooter. He had a good mid-range game, but could not shoot from outside. And back then, they weren't supposed to at the foul forward position. But from an athletic standpoint, I feel like something that comes across a lot of time with especially younger fans today, like, you know, they were playing plumbers and you know, people weren't athletic back then. And that's true to a point. Definitely the league was not as deep, and people at the end of the bench were not probably the best athletes in the 80s. But Larry Nance's athleticism at 6'10", even by today's standards, it's kind of rare at that size to be able to jump that high and to be that athletic in the paint. And he was doing this when, again, the other power forwards of that era, I'm trying to think now off the top of my head. I didn't really have this plan, but what other big men in the 80s had the level of athleticism Larry Nance did in terms of like dunking and just be able to finish in the paint like that? Because, I mean, Barkley was not that tall. He was 6'4", 6'5", super athletic early. But, you know, Malone, McHale,
I got two that come to mind. One is an offensive player and one is a defensive player. So I think if you combine them, you maybe get the best Larry Nance. And that would be Dennis Rodman on defense and Tom
I like
Chambers on
that.
offense.
I like that. Okay. I like that. Tom Chambers, massive hops, underrated hops for Tom Chambers there.
Another big dunker. Yeah, but I mean, you're absolutely right. I think if he plays in today's game, now, you know, maybe he does develop a three because it's a different game and even big guys
Of
are doing
course.
that. But he could be sort of the ideal stretch five in a lot of ways, I
Oh,
think.
yeah.
Or you know, you could, and we see a lot of teams, my Timberwolves obviously doing that this year, stacking up the big guys, and then maybe you could put him at the four or even the three, because you know, I think he probably athletically he could do it on the defensive side. And you know, he had a nice little mid-range jump shot, and I think today, if it being brought up in a different era, he might be shooting from a bit further out. But as you said, like, you know, that wasn't back then. It was a different game, and that wasn't expected. And I mean, talk about a different game. I rewatched the whole first ever slam dunk contest just to sort of prep
I did
myself
too.
here, and like, honestly, these dunks by 2023 standards do not look that cool. But you have to remember, it was the first ever NBA dunk contest. He
Yeah.
does like he does a double reverse dunk where he holds the ball in each hand. You know, I haven't reviewed every ABA dunk contest, so but I think he invented that one. And then he did like he comes from the left, throws it off the backboard, and then jumps all the way to the right side of the back basket and does like a two-handed reverse dunk. So these were certainly 1984. These were pretty exciting and pretty new.
Yeah, a lot of those dunks that were getting very high scores back in 84, those are like the safe dunks they do when they've missed like several times. I will say is Rock the Cradle dunk, which is the famous one that it still holds. Like anytime they're rocking the cradle, that it always holds. And again, that's the famous picture. But Alex, I want to move to our next segment here. We call this That Memorable Moment. And I really leave it up to my guests. It can be a single play. It can be a game, a playoff series. It could be an entire season if you really want it to. For Larry Nance, what do you say his most memorable moment was? Maybe besides that dunk contest.
Yeah, so we already discussed the dunk contest, but let's go to later in that season. He's the best player on the Suns, takes him to the Western Conference Finals, averages 22 points, 11 rebounds a game. They fall to the Lakers in six, and this was, you know, the Lakers at the absolute, absolute, absolute peak of Magic overlapping with Kareem before he's, you know, gotten too old. So taking those Lakers to six is nothing to be ashamed of, and you know, averaging 22 and 11 against that team, pretty impressive. So I'll say, and by the way, that's one of the many seasons in which he was snubbed from the All-Star team. That year, his teammate Walter Davis made it, who, you know, Walter Davis is pretty good. I know you've discussed him before, but Nance was the better player that season.
Yeah, and that's funny you have that down because I have that down, but I also want to talk about the other time he made the conference finals, which was against my Chicago Bulls
Yeah,
in
with the Cavs.
'92. And one of the better Bulls teams, I think, of the six championships they won in the '90s, that '92 Bulls team, you know, the repeat year after the first in '91. This is a 67 win Bull team. And this is a really good Cavs team that Nance is on with Mark Price, Brad Daugherty, a few other good role players. And Nance is averaging 18 and 9 in that with three assists, but 3.3 blocks. And they take the Bulls to six games. And even though they lose in six, they couldn't force a seven. Nance is by far the reason they almost forced a seven. He goes 25, 16 and 5 with three blocks and two steals in 46 of the 48 minutes. I would say Nance was also the best player in that conference series as well. So you said he was the best in the Suns series that year. Later, when he's with the Cavs, he's the best in that. And I don't want to, I want to stop here for a second and kind of appreciate this because, yes, this is not the NBA Finals. And yes, Nance never made the NBA Finals. And if you look at some of his contemporaries, you know, the power forwards of the 80s, the Barkleys, you know, Barkley, of course, makes the finals in 93, Malone in 97 and 98. So way after the 80s. And then McHale, of course, is winning championships with Boston. But Nance is making it to two conference finals in a pretty stacked, you know, time period for some power teams. And he's one of the best players on those teams. And I think of like some of the recent stars, and everyone relax when I say some of these names, but like some of the recent stars that haven't had the most playoff success, but are going to end up in the Hall of Fame or already in the Hall of Fame. Like, you know, T-Mac, a great player, never makes it past like the second round other than with the Spurs when he's playing like a minute or two a game. You know, Vince Carter made one conference finals in 2010. He's averaging 14 a game. Carmelo Anthony made one conference finals. He averages 28 points per game in that conference finals, but shooting 41% from the field. And even someone like Dame Lillard, He made one conference finals in his career with the Blazers, averaged 22 points a game in there. They were swept. And these are some of the guys, again, they're either in the Hall of Fame like T-Mac or are definitely going to make the Hall of Fame. And these are stars, but they were the best player on a team for one conference finals run, and that's it. Nance, again, I think he had a pretty good supporting cast on both of these, but he made two conference finals as one of the best players and took a Lakers team with Magic Johnson, Kareem to six. He took a Bulls team with MJ and Pippen to six. And I just don't think, again, we only think of the finals, but I think conference finals, they got MVP trophies they give out now. I think it matters he was getting teams that far. He's not just a guy who was putting up pretty good numbers on some teams. He was a guy who was putting up very good numbers on teams that were a few wins away from a finals. And I think, again, revisionist history, if he were to get over the hump one of those years and make a finals, I think we look at Larry Nance and I think his name carries a little more weight than it does today.
Yeah, and another guy I was thinking of as you were saying that, another Eastern Conference forward, although he's in the 80s, but he's more early 80s than late 80s, so they didn't really overlap. Not in the Hall of Fame, Marquez Johnson, another guy. I'm looking at Larry Nance's teams had a 6-8 record in playoff series. They won six series and lost eight, which obviously means he made the playoffs eight times since he never won a ring. And Marquez Johnson made the playoffs six times in a little bit of a shorter career. His teams went 4-6. Another guy who was the best player or arguably the best player in Johnson's case. I think he was more clearly the best player. On a bunch of really good, like 50 plus win teams in the East who just ran into tougher squads. And, you know, the same way those Bucks are kind of those early 80s Bucks have been largely forgotten and Marcus Johnson's not in the Hall of Fame. Certainly those late 80s, early 90s, Mark Price, Brad Daugherty, you know, we mentioned these guys. That Cavs team is basically forgotten because when you're a team that in the NBA, we tend to do this, like because we're so focused like on rings culture, you have franchises with these like nice, like regular season runs. During Nance's Cavaliers career, his team had the third best record in the East behind only the Bulls, who of course had the three-peat, and then the Knicks who make it to the finals and then the Eastern Conference finals twice. But because that team never makes it all the way, we kind of forget about them almost like, you know, a half generation later, when we're a little bit more aware, you have like the Weber Divock Kings, or even the Nash Amari Suns. And by the way, those are also teams where other than like the highest profile guy on that team, it's hard to make the Hall of Fame. When, you know, Sean Marion, who ultimately ends up winning a ring with the Mavs, he's not in the Hall of Fame yet. Amari Stoudemire in the Hall of Fame yet. And you go to the Kings. Divots, Weber was the main guy on that team and, you know, deserved to make it all the way. It even took him an extra year. Divots makes it, probably doesn't make it though, if not for the international help, I think. So a lot of times, if you have a good team in the regular season, but you don't ultimately have postseason success, you get a little bit forgotten.
Yeah, I love you brought up Sean Marion because I think Nance and Marion have some similarities here across the board from an advanced metrics standpoint, as well as their standing in the league. Like Marion was a excellent player for those Suns team. And really, at times when Amari was hurt, took over. But because they never made over the hump, again, Nash is in, of course, a two-time MVP. Both Amari and Marion, who, you know, I think Amari has like five All-NBA teams. Marion's a little more lower than that. He's like a four-time All-Star, two-time All-NBA guy. Nance was never All-NBA, but those guys are kind of, again, never got over the hump, not as remembered. And I remember them, of course, because that was only 15 years ago. But 30 years from now, I don't know if people are going to be talking about those teams like I can talk about them today. And again, maybe Nance's teams were talking about in the late 90s, but now all these years later, they're not talked about as much. Because I know growing up, no one was really telling me about the great Cleveland teams or the Milwaukee Bucks, as you mentioned. But in that time period, as you said, third most wins. That's insane, actually. That caught me off guard a little bit. But I guess it shouldn't be too surprising.
Yeah, I got to say, I did not know about that Game 6 box score in 92. So, yeah, you
that's a sick line. Yeah, I mean,
and by that whole season, they win 57 games that year. He makes the all-defense team. Not only do I have him that year as a no-doubt all-star, which, you know, we'll talk about later, you know, how many times he actually did make the all-star
I can't
team.
Wait to hear how many he won because I love that
but
he did that.
But I thought he was stumped. I had him number 9 on my MVP ballot in 1992. So, you know, just absolutely excellent player. The Eastern Conference Finals, the furthest the Cavs had ever gone, in the pre-LeBron era. And that's the and that's two different teams that as you said that he leads the conference finals as the he was the team leader in win shares both times. But yeah, you know, listen, it's hard to get past Michael Jordan, so and Magic
Yeah.
Johnson.
And he was, and I want to point out too, 92, right? He wins that dunk contest back in 84. 92, he's 32 years old,
Yeah.
which in 92, 32 is like, it's like 35 now, like 36. Like that's old. And he makes the All-Star team the next year as a 33-year-old. At 34, he suffers a knee injury and he's kind of done from the NBA after that. He never plays again. So Nance till the end was putting up good numbers, playing solid minutes at that age. I think, again, contributes to some of his athleticism. And again, that knee injury kind of took him out later in his career. But I
And
do
by
want
the way,
to move to
you mentioned Shawn Marion before, who, you know, when we
yeah.
get to Antwins, he's not the guy I had in mind. He's not in the Hall of Fame, which is your rule, of course. But that's a pretty good comp.
It's a great comp.
I have them only three slots apart on my all-time rankings. I won't say who's higher or who's lower just yet. You just mentioned Nance is 32 in that 92 season when he loses game six of the Eastern Conference Finals to the Bulls. In Shawn Marion's age 32 season, that's the year that he wins his only NBA Finals in the with the
Ah, with the
Mavs.
Mavs, yeah.
But
Okay.
in 2011, but of course, by that point, he's no longer nearly the player he was in Phoenix, and he's no longer the player that Larry Nance was at the age of 32. I mean, you know, that was obviously Dirk's team, and after Dirk, you have Jason Terry and Jason Kidd, and Tyson Chandler, and then Marion's probably the fifth most important player. Although, you know, even JJ Barea might get in the conversation at that point. So, you know, Marion was a key contributor on a team that wins a title. But you know, at a later age, in an era when guys did not go, you know, right, and the medicine was not nearly as good in 1992 as it was in 2011 for these guys. And so pretty impressive for a guy that old to be still that good, which is why I think, like, when you look at his year-to-year numbers, it's just so much consistency, partly because, yeah, he has
So
a knee injury
consistent.
and he's done. This is other than his first season and last season, his 11 middle seasons when he's a full-time starter, he averages over 16 points and 8 rebounds in every single one of those seasons. But he only averages over 9 rebounds once, over 22 points once. So he's really in like a really tight band. Every single year, he's putting up similar numbers.
All right, Alex, let's go to our next segment and twins. So as you just said, I have rules here. You got to be in the Hall of Fame to be a twin. But for any new time listeners, what we do here is we look at the Hall of Fame today. We look at who's in already. And there's never an identical twin, but it can be, you know, how they played the game. It can be strictly statistical. It can be a mix of both. That's usually the best answers here. But we try to pick out who's the closest twin to the player we're talking about. So tonight it's Larry Nance, of course. Alex, for you. Who do you have down for Larry Nance's twin? I'm very curious here.
All right, so I actually came up with this guy ahead of time, but then just an hour before we were doing the podcast, I know you love to do this. I like to do it also. And with the caveat that, of course, you're cherry picking when you're taking the numbers that apply to your
Sure.
one guy. But with that caveat, he averaged 17, 8, and 2.5 over 920 games regular season. All right, so I looked, all right, how many guys have averaged 17, 8, and 2.5 over 920 games? And I did NBA and ABA because I'm an
Okay.
equal opportunity guy. So do you want to guess how many guys did it in history?
Let's say like 30.
Yeah, it doesn't sound that hard, right? 17 and 8, but you know what? 11 guys. And when I read you these 11
Wow,
names,
11.
we're not just talking Hall of Famers. It's Kareem, Wilt, Duncan, KG, Karl Malone, Dr. J, Barkley, Paul Gasol, Dolph Schayes, Bob Lanier, and Larry Nance.
So
So,
the worst player, who is Bob Lanier?
yeah, but yeah, Lanier, who,
Yeah,
you know, is a
like
top
Lanier,
60
yeah.
player, is
Oh
a no
yeah.
doubt Hall of Famer. Now, again, that's cherry picking the numbers. So actually, what I actually did
Sure.
next, I'm like, all right, let me do ranges. So I did anybody between 15 and 19 points per game,
Sure.
between 7 and 9 rebounds a game, and between 800 and 1,000 career games. So I created a nice wide band. I thought I'd pick up more guys. And doing it this way, I only got three names. And those three names are Kevin McHale, Larry Nance, and Amari Stoudemire, who we already mentioned. And
Wow.
so, and I love that I, and again, I did not plan this because I had already written my whole Antwins, but my Antwins. And I totally understand that for some people, they're not going to like this. It's going to be sacrilege, but it's Kevin McHale. They played the same
Nope.
position. Their
Yep.
careers almost perfectly overlapped. They played almost the exact same number of games, 18-7-2 for McHale, 17-8-3 for Nance. McHale had more offensive post moves for sure, but Nance had far more blocks. Career PERs, win shares, both identical. Nance actually has more VORP, higher BPM. The big difference, of course, McHale makes more All-Star games. And although they both got kind of snubbed by the All-NBA voters, both elite defenders. The big difference is one of them won multiple titles because he was playing alongside Larry Bird. And so, I'm not diminishing the fact that from a playoff perspective, I have them very different. In my all-time playoff rankings, I have in Kevin McHale 25 and Larry Nance 129. So, you know, one is considered one of, you know, the best, you know, second bananas in NBA history, and the other one, you know, barely being mentioned for the Hall of Fame unless it's on your podcast years later. So, but you can't convince me that if we swap McHale and Nance right before their rookie seasons, that the Celtics win fewer titles, or that the Cavs win more, or the Suns. I think they would probably end up with the same places. So
yeah, so Boston fans would want to kill you, but this is actually who I have down too.
Nice.
I don't like we are actually matching. I rarely match with my guests. I actually had several different people here, and I switched to McHale yesterday because I was looking at, we're gonna talk about it later, but just top power forwards of the 80s, and of course McHale was there. I was like, let me look, and I have a rough memorization of a lot of players' stats. I was like, I think McHale's going to be similar. And again, as you said, almost identical down the row with Nance having an advantage in every, you know, rebounds, assists, all those other than points, which they're .8 off. And they
and
play
again,
almost
we're looking
the
at
same
regular
amount of
season
games.
Numbers. We
exactly.
have to acknowledge
yeah.
that.
Playoffs,
sure.
McHale
yeah.
way exceeds Nance, as you said, 3 championship rings. And again, McHale has a lot more of the accolades, right? Crushes him in all-star appearances, defensive teams. Only one All-NBA, but it was a first team. And then, of course, the 3 rings, which is why. But I kept the whole time I kept thinking, you know, and they both actually have really long wingspans too. McHale's has been said to be 8 feet, which I still don't believe, but I think it's like up there. It's like 7'9", 7'10", something like that. But both extremely long arm, shot blocking, power forwards in the 80s. You know, head-to-head matchups, McHale crushes Nance 19-8, but as you said, he's with Larry Bird and Parrish. And again, like the rebounding numbers, I was surprised Nance had the edge on McHale because some of McHale's better years, you know, he was averaging closer to 10. But at the same time, McHale was fighting with Bird, averaged 10 rebounds for his career. Parrish is a double-digit guy. So he was kind of fighting for the rebounds. And when you said the switch out thing, it's funny. I wasn't ever imagining switching Nance out with McHale. I don't know. I feel like Bird and McHale next to each other, I just like drilled in my brain. But I do play that game a lot. But where I went to more, and I was like, you know what would have been fun as hell? If Larry Nance switched out with James Worthy on those 80s Lakers teams, and Larry Nance was just running with Magic. And Magic's just tossing up alley-oops, not to Michael Cooper all the time, but to Larry Nance at 6'10".
Yeah, great
room. I can't get over that thing, that comp. And again, this is nothing against James Worthy. He's in the Hall of Fame. That's completely fine. But if you match up Nance versus Worthy, who played a lot more small forward than power forward, again, points per game, Worthy's 17.6. Again, Nance is 17.1. Nance is the superior rebounder by far to Worthy, a superior shot blocker, field goal percentage. And then, like, if you look at advanced metrics, Nance, even though Worthy played on, you know, the Lakers, who are winning all the time and, you know, are running up the score, box plus minus, Nance blows Worthy out of the water, and value over replacement player, Nance blows Worthy out of the water. So again, this is nothing against Worthy. This is nothing against McHale. It's just Nance, if in those situations, from a defensive and offensive standpoint, would have brought something different to the table. But I don't think it would have been like a detriment to either of those teams. And again, sometimes this is how it works. Unfair or not, a lot of it's luck. A lot of how your career goes is luck. You go in the right situation. Worthy and McHale, obviously perfect fits where they were. But I think Nance would have shined as well, especially I think on those Lakers teams.
Yeah, no, that's another good call. Worthy obviously probably a little bit better of a shot creator, but Nance
sure.
far better defensively. Another forward from the 80s who I thought of is Bobby Jones. Their career is similar length. Both of them, I think, were disrespected by All-Star All-NBA voters because so much of their value was on the defensive side. Nance is not at Bobby Jones's level, right? Jones is one of the greatest defensive players of all time, but offensively, you know, Jones was not Nance. Just 12 points a game for Jones. So, and that includes, you know, earlier in the ABA where Jones got to pad those numbers. But although Bobby Jones, again, he gets the ring because he's playing alongside Dr. J and Moses. And you know, the best team that Larry Nance ever has is that we talked about the Mark Price 92 team with Brad Daugherty. But you know, in another era, that team maybe. But Michael Jordan, you know, it, from 91 to 93 and 96 to 98. Everybody other than Michael Jordan did not win. So that's just what happened. And then by the time MJ retires for the first time, you know, when Ewing has his chance to make it through the East, and then by that point, Nance has been injured and his career's over. So.
All right, Alex, I want to go to our final segment. We call this Court.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
And what we do here is what we've been doing so far. Pros, cons for Nance's Cansey. I want to start here because we've dabbled here, but I really want to drill into some of these numbers. And I want to get your thoughts on some of these. Because I don't know how much I know of your thought process when it comes to advanced metrics and how you view that for someone's case. So what I will say here is if the Hall of Fame was the advanced metrics Hall of Fame, if that's all that mattered for the Basketball Hall of Fame advanced metrics, I think Larry Nance would have been a no-brainer candidate and someone who would have been in the Hall of Fame a long time ago. Because if you look strictly just advanced metrics, he's a shoo-in. He's 3.6 box plus minus for his career. That's 44th in NBA history. His 53.5 value over replacement player, that's 48th in NBA history. 109.6 win shares in just 13 seasons. That's 63rd in NBA history. His 0.171 win shares per 48 minutes, 60th in NBA history. And his 19.9 PER is 80th in NBA history. If you look at power forwards, and again, all of this is from 1973 to 1974. So anyone that's playing before then or played during that period, kind of crossover, they're getting screwed on those rankings. But since that time period, he ranks in win shares ninth all time among power forwards and sixth all time among VORP. Again, and he played under 1,000 games. So the longevity didn't really get him there. It was just when he was playing, he was ranking very high in these advanced metrics. So again, if the Hall of Fame only cared about this, he would be in already. But that's not how the Hall of Fame works. And unlike baseball, where advanced metrics have solely taken over a lot of voters' minds in terms of who they're voting for, that's definitely not the case for basketball today, at least yet. It's definitely bleeding into the culture more today than it ever has before, but it's still not something everyone kind of abides by or everyone understands. So my question to you, Alex, is when you're looking at someone's candidacy or you do all your rankings, how much, if any, stock do you take into advanced metrics like this?
So, I mean, I definitely do. I try and use every piece of information that we have. And I take into account what the voters at the time said also, but with the caveat that those voters at the time didn't have all the information that, you know, voters today do. Not the voters today are perfect, but they tend to get it more right than wrong. And so, yeah, Larry Nance, I think he really benefits there. One of the many things that I've done is I've gone back in every season in history and done who should have made the All-Star teams every single year, following the rules that each league had at that time. Based on that, I give Larry Nance 8 All-Star appearances instead of 3.
Wow.
And if he has 8 All-Star appearances, I can say with almost certainty he's already in the Hall of Fame. And by the way, that's a -5 in terms of his bad luck with the voters. That's, you know, that's the highest, the unluckiest, quote unquote, guy I have in history is John Stockton, who did make 10, but I give him 16. So that's a -6. And then right behind that, I have the -5s, which are Reggie Miller, Larry Nance, Manu Ginobili, Sam Cassell. All of those guys should have been All-Stars 5 more times. And it's interesting. I think the advanced stats definitely benefit Nance and Manu and Reggie, especially, and also John Stockton, really all those guys except Cassell. I'm not sure why Cassell did not get more recognition on those Bucks teams and those Nets teams. But yeah, so Nance, I think one of the most sort of disrespected players in terms of the voting, in terms of the awards. And you really go through like year by year. And I really don't get it. Like, you know, that second season of his, the first year as a starter, that you know, that's a team, he's leading that team in win shares. That's a 53 win team. Maurice Lucas makes the All-Star team for him, which Maurice Lucas had a negative box plus minus that year. So I think that, you know, not he shouldn't have come anywhere close to an All-Star game, and Nance should have been the All-Star, but they decided one guy's going to make it from the Suns. We're going to go with the veteran over the rookie. Fine. The next year we talked about already, that's the year that he wins the slam dunk contest. Then the next year after that, which is the first year that his team falls under 500, actually, in 1985. But that's when he becomes an actual All-Star for the first time. So it should have been his third straight, finally makes it. And he continued to improve every year. Six consecutive seasons to start his career. His scoring went up in all six seasons, which I think shows something really impressive. And I had him, you know, making the All-Star team just about every one of these seasons. But he never makes it. And he only makes it three times, excuse me. And I think that really hurts him. He never makes an All-NBA team, as you said. I have him with one second team and three third teams. And so I think that the awards and the voters at the time, and, you know, it is something that frustrates me a little bit, that the people who sort of claim to be old school and traditional and care about defense, they are the ones who tend to underrate and dismiss sort of defense focused players, both in basketball and baseball. I think this is true. When a guy doesn't have the big gaudy counting stats because he has value in defense, those are the guys who tend to get disrespected by those kinds of voters. I was thinking this earlier on the podcast when you mentioned in the 80s, guys who's, you know, how about Lou Whitaker and Alan Trammell? Trammell finally makes the Hall of Fame. I don't know if we're allowed to do a cross sport and twins, but Trammell, a guy who finally made the Hall of Fame, a star in the 80s in the Midwest who didn't get recognition because he provided a lot of value on the defensive side.
I love the anytime we go cross sport in this pod, I love it. Yeah. People do it for and twins. So you're definitely very inbounds. I've had people give me baseball players for basketball episodes and football players. So that's just I've seen way crazier than that. But before we move on, because I want to go back to those advanced stats and I want to kind of quiz you on something like you quizzed me earlier. But just really quick for my listeners, Alex, and for my own curiosity as well. You go back and you hand out All-Star appearances that, you know, should have happened maybe. What is your criteria for that? Are you looking at the first half of the season until the All-Star break? So, are you looking at the whole year?
Yeah. So that,
how are
that's,
you doing that?
Yeah. So I'm doing full season. And I've done it in the NFL also, only for quarterback, running back, wide receiver, because, you know, it's too hard to do it.
You don't want to do it for like guards and centers? Yeah. No.
Not a lot of information on the guard play in 1973. Joe DeMel, I can't pronounce his name, but the great guard with O.J. Simpson on the Bills, probably he probably had good stats that year. But I do a full season because that's another problem. All-Star teams are decided like 40% of the way through a season, and sure. Then when we look at a player's legacy, we base on how many All-Star games he had. Sometimes a guy's season started low, especially for a lot of young, like in baseball, you see this all the time. Like guys won't make the All-Star team, and then we'll be like, Justin Morneau was not an All-Star the year he won the MVP because he wasn't a big name yet. And so 2 months of play, you know, early in the season wasn't that exciting when there's a bunch of sort of named guys at a position like first base. And so he ends up winning the MVP that year. Wasn't even an All-Star. You would never see that in the NBA, for example, but it's still a problem to anoint guys as All-Stars based on 40 games. So I'm looking at the full season. I'm going back and looking at their numbers for all 82 games.
Got it. Okay. That's completely fair. Okay. Before we move on from the advanced metric conversation completely, you did some cherry picking earlier and you know, I had something cherry picked ready to go here. This list is going to be more than 11 because I can't believe that list was only 11. That's shocking still to me right now, but this list is going to be larger than 11. But I looked at some of these advanced metrics. So I looked at win shares. I looked at box plus minus, and I looked at value over replacement player, otherwise known as VORP. So I looked at those three numbers that Larry Nance had. And again, he had a 43.5 career VORP, which again, if you've never really heard that terminology, that means nothing to you, but it's very high in the all-time rankings. A 3.6 box plus minus and 109.6 win shares, again, in just 13 seasons, because that's something you got to kind of accumulate over time. How many players in NBA history, so not ABA, we're only NBA here, in NBA history have reached all three of those thresholds?
Yeah, and I think we have to note the caveat. It starts 73, 74.
Correct. So Bill Russell's not on here, Will. Jerry West. Elgin Baylor.
Yeah.
Yeah. All those guys, I'm sure, would have been here. So, yeah, since 1973, 74. And again, if someone's career started in like 67 and went through 80, they're still losing, you know, a number of seasons. So their total is not going to be high. So very clear to point that out.
Well, So VORP, which is the sort of the closest equivalent to baseball war. Yeah. That's an accumulating stat like win shares. BPM is a rate stat. So there it wouldn't necessarily harm you. to start in the middle. So how many guys surpassed all three of his numbers? Is that your question?
Yeah, have at least reached that all three of those thresholds all at the same time, right? So at least 43.5 VORP, at least 3.6 box minus, at least 109.6 win shares. It's more than 11.
Okay, I'll guess 18 guys.
Okay, it's 25 other guys. And again, if you look at the list, there's no outliers here. There's no Andre Kurlenko sneaking in, who's a advanced metric superstar. I would say the three worst players on this list are Pau Gasol, Paul Pierce, and Clyde Drexler. Those would be the three worst. Everyone else, it's like Kobe and Barkley and David Robinson, Kareem, Duncan, Jordan. Like, that's it. Like, the worst are Drexler and Paul Pierce and Gasol. Yeah. So that's the company he keeps. There's no other
outliers. The worst guys are first ballot Hall of Famers.
Exactly. All right, so let's go to the 80s. That's when most of his career played in power forwards. So I have this methodology here, Alex. I don't know if I've told you this or you've heard this, but I look at any sport, baseball, basketball, football, and I go, were you top five at your position for like your main decade? And if you're top five, that doesn't mean you're in the Hall of Fame. It just means you should definitely be very well in the conversation for the Hall of Fame. And some sports are a little different, but usually top five gets me in the ballpark here. So I was looking at the 80s and I was looking at power forwards. And if I'm ranking them, you know, there's Charles Barkley, there's Karl Malone, there's Kevin McHale. I have those clearly, you know, I'm not going to rank them, but they're the top three for me. But then I was looking at who's fourth, who's the fourth best power forward of the 80s. And that's where Larry Nance, I think, can be in the ballgame. So I have five other names here of power forwards in the 80s who at least played a pretty good chunk of their career in the 80s or some of their peak in the 80s, at least. And I'm going to list the names. And when I say the name, if you think that, you know, Larry Nance was better, say Nance. If you think the player I'm saying is better, say their name. So, right, if I said Charles Barkley, you would say Barkley.
Yeah.
But if I said, you know, I'm trying to think of a terrible power forward in the 80s, but someone like that, you would say Nance. Yeah.
Well,
okay,
here's my question, because, you know, I did my homework. I knew this was coming. And so I ranked my 80s power forwards, but I did it two ways. I did the guys who most of their career was in the 80s, like predominantly 80s guys, but also, you know, played in other eras. And that, and then I did a separate ranking of only the 80s years of the guys. So,
oh my God, you would 90, go over the 91, top and do 92. That.
That doesn't count. So do you want me to
you
go
with... just give me your list then?
Okay, fine. So if we're looking only the 80s, right? So
okay,
this doesn't take into, you know, everything Karl Malone did, you know, for the Jazz against the Bulls, that doesn't count. Only 80s, I go with Barkley number one.
Okay.
McHale number two.
Okay.
Malone number three.
Okay.
Terry Cummings number four.
Okay.
Buck Williams number five.
Yep.
And then I have Nance sixth. And then I have Dan Roundfield, Cliff Robinson, and Otis Thorpe at 7, 8, 9. But that's only
all 80. Names, all the names I was gonna run through, but that's great. Okay.
But that doesn't take into account, you know, everything he did in Cleveland. That was in the 90s. Sure. So if we take the full career of 80s power forwards, and you said, you know, can he get into the top five? So the top three, Malone, Barkley, McHale. I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah, we're good with that.
Yep. But number four, that's where I have Larry Nance. I have Nance four, Dennis Rodman five, who, you know, obviously more in the 90s and the 80s with the
for sure.
You know, he wins the defense player of the year in those two titles. So I have Rodman five, and then Buck Williams, Terry Cummings, Otis Thorpe, and then Charles Oakley, Sam Perkins, AC Green, and Tom Chambers. That's my top 12 1980s power forwards overall.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, you know, I don't know when we're getting to final verdicts, but it's starting to sound like.
that's good company to keep. But let me be clear to the listeners here, right? Barkley, Malone, McHale, obviously all in the Hall of Fame. Rodman in the Hall of Fame. But all those other names you named, you know, Cummings, Ronfield, Chambers. You know, Chambers has 20,000 career points. Buck Williams, we were talking about how, you know, well, Larry Nance grades advanced metrics. Bucks Williams, especially in win shares, is way above him. And one of the highest win shares totals not in the Hall of Fame, if not possibly the highest win shares totaled not in the Hall of Fame.
But he also
today.
Played for like 18
he played
years,
forever. That's so, the thing. It's like if Nance played forever. But
yeah,
four of those guys, power forwards that play in the 80s in the Hall of Fame, just off the top of your head, Alex, because I'm thinking about that, does that seem low for a position for a decade? Or does that seem about right to you?
I mean, I think it's a little... In baseball, for example, I think it's really important to have parity of positions in the Hall of Fame. We need more catchers and third basemen in the Hall of Fame, for example. Yep. But basketball is a little different, and I'm even more influenced by today, where it's positionless basketball. But right, like, it doesn't really, like, if you had Ralph Sampson and Hakeem Olajuwon on your team, okay, so one of them was listed as a power forward, or now, you know, or Tim Duncan was listed as a power forward, or Karl Anthony Towns is now, because that, you know, that who he was playing next to. So there was a lot of great centers and a lot of great small forwards in the '80s, and so I think that sort of makes up for those were sort of, it was one of the richest eras ever for small forwards and centers. Everything was a good era basically in the 20th century. And so I think that's why there's fewer power forwards, but yeah, power forward was never, I mean, even in the 60s or the 70s, power forward was not really a premier position before Malone and Barkley. And then obviously Duncan and KG and Dirk Nowitzki and, you know, everyone else. But I don't think it sounds low by sort of the modern ear, but I think it sort of made sense at the time. Like, none of those guys below him probably deserve to make it into the Hall of Fame. I know you've done a podcast about a bunch of them. So yeah, he really is sort of right in between the no doubt guys and then the guys who should not be in.
So the last thing I want to get to, Alex, is one last quiz question for you that maybe you prep for too, and then I'll just give it over to you. But before we get the final verdict here, so the counting stats thing with Larry Nance, he only played 13 years. And again, they're not the level of some Hall of Famers, but by no means is he a chump whatsoever. You know, he scored 15,687 career points. And again, he had over 2,000 career blocks. He's very high on the all-time blocks total list. Real quickly for you, because I was looking at who had over 2,000 blocks in their career. Only 19 players have over 2,000 blocks in their career. It's very impressive. My question to you is, again, I said he had over 15,000 points. He had 15,687. How many players in NBA history had over 15,000 points and over 2,000 blocks?
So I have to admit, I was looking at the block list earlier today because when I gave you the number that he was top 20 all time.
Yeah.
So it's fewer than 20 because only 20 guys have more blocks.
Yep.
And a bunch of those are like the Mark Eatons of the world and the Tree Rollins of the world.
Yep.
So more than 15,000 points. I'll say 10 of those guys. I'll say half of them.
Yeah. Larry Nance is the 10th on that scoring
exactly
list.
10? Oh, okay, good.
Yep. And ahead of him is, again, Dwight Howard, David Robinson, Robert Parrish, Patrick Ewing, KG, Duncan, Olajuwon, O'Neal, Jabbar. And then interesting, you know, right below him on that points threshold, because I was going by total points there, because everyone has over 2,000 blocks on this list I'm reading from, Alonzo Mourning, 14,300 points. Dikembe Mutombo, 11,700 points. And then, of course, Ben Wallace at 6,254 points. Those are the Hall of Famers that I wanted to call out. And then, you know, there's the Cambys, the Bradleys, the Eatons, the Manu Bulls of the world.
So everyone in that top 10 is a Hall of Famer, and everyone in that top 10 is a center, except Duncan and KG. But Duncan really was a center for, you know, most of his career, and KG was just, you know, a freak. And so he's probably the shortest, other than Ben Wallace, who you just mentioned, doesn't have the points. But he's probably the shortest of all these guys at 6'10", right? I mean, maybe. Anyone else was that short? I don't think so.
No. So I mean, again, it's like, there's this of the shot blockers, right? There's the guys who are the all-time greats that scored a ton of points too. And then there's this, like, guys that were just primary shot blockers, like the Ben Walls, Tree Rollins, Bradleys. And then there's this middle group, this 10 through 12 on the points of Nance at 15,000, Alonzo at 14,000, Mutombo at 11,000, who are kind of these in-between guys. But again, Mourning and Mutombo are in the Hall of Fame, and Nance is the guy outside looking in, but they're all in that kind of middle of the pack. They're that in-between between the Olajuwon, Duncan, KGs, and the Eatons, the Bulls, and the Rollins, and the Bradleys. So just very interesting to look at guys who could block shots and score points. You're either at the very high end of the all-time greats, the guys who are the just shot blockers. There's only a few guys in the middle who were pretty decent scorers. And honestly, Mutombo was not really a decent scorer. So really just Mourning and Nance in that middle ground. And then also elite shot blockers. Dwight Howard, not the best scorer, but still, he's going to maybe wrap up his career 20,000 points if he ever comes back. He might fall just short, I guess, if he never comes back from Taiwan. Is he still in Taiwan? Where is he right now?
I'm not sure.
He done? I don't know where he is. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, we're going to go to Dwight Howard here. Final verdict, Alex, for you. Two questions, and then I'll answer them. One, do you believe that Larry Nance belongs in the Hall of Fame? And then the second question is, do you think he'll ever get into the Hall of Fame?
Yeah. So the answer to number one, and the reason I'm on the podcast, because, you know, I'm not from Phoenix or Cleveland. I'm not a fan of those teams necessarily, is because I've done my all-time rankings, and there's only three guys in my top 92 that aren't in the Hall of Fame yet. And of guys who are active, right? Sure. Excuse me, of guys who are eligible. Excuse me. Obviously, there's a bunch of guys who are active who haven't made, but everyone else above him, or everyone else in the top 92, and I have Larry Nance at 81, is in the Hall of Fame or will be in the Hall of Fame, is active right now, except for Chauncey Billups, who you've already done a podcast about, Sean Marion, who we've discussed, you've already done a podcast about, and Larry Nance. So, yes, I do think Larry Nance should be in the Hall of Fame. I think he was basically the perfect combination of the underappreciated player because of his defensive value on the underappreciated teams, right? He was the best player on those Suns teams. They didn't do that much. And then when he joined those Cavs teams, by the way, when he joined the Cavs, they had not been above 500 since the 1970s. Wow. So, but they had, you know, the young Mark Price and Brad Daugherty, who was, had a little bit of a soft reputation, needed the defensive big next to him. And, you know, Nance came and they just completely took off. You know, they win 57 games for a team that had never won 50 in their history. They lose in the playoffs to your Michael Jordan with the epic shot over Craig Elo. And then, of course, we talk about what happens. You know, the Bulls beat him again and the Bulls beat him again. And so I think that really harms him. And then I think the other thing that harms him is he provides almost identical value for his two teams. 6.5 seasons in Phoenix, 6.5 seasons in Cleveland, 487 games in Phoenix, 433 games in Cleveland, 17-8-3 for both teams, 20 PER for both teams, 54 and 56 win shares respectively, 21.9 value over replacement player in Phoenix, 21.6 for Cleveland. If he goes into the Hall of Fame, which jersey does he wear, right? To use a baseball-like argument, that's part of the problem because he doesn't have the dedicated fan base advocating for him. And so to answer question number two, I think no, because I just, you know, listen, everybody makes the Basketball Hall of Fame eventually. And so, you know, maybe there's some scenario in which, but it just, he doesn't have, if he plays for one team, he's already in. If he plays in the modern era where fans have a bit more appreciation for, like, yeah, you know, some of these advanced numbers and defensive value where he makes 8 all-star teams instead of 3 all-star teams, he's already in. But when you take all that away, I'm not sure why. Like I have a bunch of guys, you know, who aren't in the Hall of Fame yet, but, you know, basically aren't eligible yet. And we're going to have to get through all of those guys. And when are we going to remember Larry Nance, right? Like Sean Marion probably deserves it a little bit more and played a little bit more recently. So he's in voters' minds. Like how many voters, when they hear Larry Nance's name, think of Larry Nance Sr., not Jr.? So I unfortunately don't think he's going to make it, but he would definitely be if I was in charge.
So I think we made an excellent case for Nance. And honestly, when we talked about doing this, I did not appreciate Nance's career as much. And again, I know we cherry pick on this show, but some of the lists, right, when his name shows up, it's pretty baffling, like how he fits in there. And this is a guy for a long time. I just thought of him as the slam dunk contest guy, right? Like guy that can dunk, dunker. But you look at his career, so much more. I am still, though, at the moment, a no for Larry Nance for the Hall of Fame. That's because when I look at someone's career, I try to look at everything and I always try to trust me. And then maybe I shouldn't be so trustworthy, but I always trust the people because I wasn't there for Larry Nance when he was playing. I was not around to watch him and what people were saying around the league. But when I look at just how people voted back then, and again, he made 3 all defensive teams. He was a good shot blocker, 2 second teams and a first, 3 all-star appearances. I know you said 8, like he maybe should have won and maybe he should have. But he still has 3, and he never finished in the top 12, even an MVP vote. And he only got MVP votes 1 year in 1989. And the accolades part for him is just too low for some of his other stuff for me to overcome. And then even though I was making a big case about how it was a big deal about the conference finals, which I do think it's a big deal, not ever making a finals and making noise in the finals and being a part of a memorable team because he split times with both. It's just, again, Larry Nance is not someone – even a good, like a someone that loves the NBA probably knows much about besides, you know, his son plays in the league now. So it is the Hall of Fame. I can't get him over the hump. However, Alex, when do we think he'll ever get in the Hall of Fame? This is how I think he could get in. If the Basketball Hall of Fame over gravitates toward what the Baseball Hall of Fame, I feel like, is gravitating toward, where advanced metrics, like people are digging up people who had really high wars and making super hard cases. And these are guys who fell off the ballot after 1 year. And again, there's still people with very high wars like Lou Whitaker, which you brought up earlier, 75, not in the Hall of Fame today. But if Lou Whitaker ever gets in, I think it's going to be because of that high war total where younger voters are coming in. They hold that so much more. If down the road, the younger voters for the Basketball Hall of Fame are obsessed with value over replacement player or win shares, and they really start to gravitate more and more to those numbers, Larry Nance is going to stick out like a sore thumb when they go to reevaluate the 70s and the 80s and the 90s in 30 years. And he would be one of the first people they try to rectify and put in there. So do I think he should be in? No, but do I think he'll get in? Outside of your comment about everyone gets in the NBA Hall or Basketball Hall of Fame eventually, which you are not entirely wrong there, but there's still some pretty good players outside looking in. I would say he's in the next 30 years. I do believe that. I don't think it's next 10. I don't think it's next 15. I think it's when voters being born today are voters in 20, 25 years. I guess people that are maybe in elementary, junior high, 20, 25 years. I think the tide becomes a big case for him. And I think he gets in. So I think he does get in one day, but it's 25 years out.
Mm. So how often have you had it that you and the guest both vote the opposite way on both
not
of the votes?
Not much. Yeah. Not much. And I can't remember last time we potted together. Were we agreeing or disagreeing?
It was Jared Allen. So I think it was a little bit more of a clear cut.
Oh, that was more of a clear cut thing. Yeah. Okay. Never mind. Yeah, no, it's not often. It's usually we either agree on the same thing or disagree. So I kind of like the flip flop. It's a little nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, Alex, per always, you know, great talking to you. Thank you for coming on the podcast. Before we get you out of here, though, anything you want to plug here at the end?
You know, we do a 32 Fans podcast every single week. We mostly are a football podcast, especially this time of year, but we go year round and we discuss other sports and things as they come up. I also have a Curb Your Enthusiasm podcast called Ooh. Pretty, Pretty, Pretty Good, which turned into a Friends podcast for reasons that if you listen to that podcast, you understand, but we'll be turning back into a Curb Your Enthusiasm podcast in the new year because the final season of Curb is coming in February. So if you're a fan of Curb, we have a whole backlog of episodes you can listen to and a bunch of episodes coming in January to get us pumped up for the final season.
Alex, I'm like probably one of the only people I know that does not watch Curb.
Well, you know what? February 4th, missing, you have about time, a month and
it,
a half.
Is it time to start?
110 episodes and then listen to 110 podcasts. So.
All right. Well, I have some time off work coming up, so that might work out. But Alex, again, thank you for coming on the podcast. Enjoyed it. And, you know, 30 years from now, if Larry Nance does get in, I'm sure Twitter or whatever, our emails have changed. I'll figure out a way to contact you and we can bring you back on for a celebratory a podcast there.
Yep. And you'll be complaining the voters are wrong and I'll be shocked that the voters are right, I guess.
All right, Alex. Bye-bye. Take care. Thanks again. All right, I want to thank Alex again for coming on the podcast. Talk about Larry Nance. That is all we have for you today. If you don't already, please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Pod of Fame. If you've done all that, you've done your homework. I hope you have a great New Year's Day. I hope the work week ahead of you is not too intimidating, but enjoy today. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next Monday. Take care.